Welcome to Change Surfer Radio. I'm Dr. J, and I'll be your guide to a sexy high-tech vision of a radically democratic future. So keep your mind open and your radio tuned to the left. I'm speaking today with Wendell Wallach. Wendell is the former director of an international computer consulting firm. He also has been a human potential instructor and a political activist. Now he's working on the field of robot ethics. He's writing two books about the topic and related to the topic, and he's putting together a collection of essays on the topic of robot ethics. Welcome, Wendell.
Hello.
Tell us how you came to be concerned about the field of robot ethics.
Well, my main interests actually are human ethics and human decision-making, and particularly over issues that we consider to be ethical issues. And in dealing with that, I bring into play a lot of the technological issues, a lot of the interests around what we're learning from cognitive psychology, from artificial intelligence research, and even introspective research, meditation, and other things people engage in. And as I was going more and more into that, I was seeing how prominent many of the questions that artificial intelligence research was raising, in particular in regards to whether we are mechanical beings and that we can be reproduced in the laboratory by engineers. And so that had me focus more and more on the legitimacy of those claims and the practicality of it as they started to put together robotic systems.
So one of the kinds of complaints that people have with the field of robotics is that they are concerned that the effort to imagine human beings as being machine-like or being able to be replicated in machines will do damage to the moral fabric of society as a whole, that we need to maintain the interpretation of human beings as being animated by a divine spark if we are to have ethics. That's not your concern, is it?
Well, I think that is one concern. That is one of the subjects that I find interesting. But I think this particular topic, robot ethics, that I've been focusing on has been more about whether it's even practical and what it would mean to make it practical and what that tells us about how humans function.
So what's the timeline for the technologies that you think are going to be problematic here? Do you follow a Kurzweilian technocalypse kind of scenario where within a very short period of time we're going to have a proliferation of computer minds, or do you have a more pessimistic vision of how long it's going to take and how difficult it's going to be to develop machine intelligence?
Well, I think actually there are three different timelines, and one of them is this one that Ray Kurzweil and Hans Moravec, are pushing, which is roughly 30 years for human-level robots, or robots with the equivalent of human minds. And that all focuses on a continuation of Moore's law and a belief that science is growing exponentially, and therefore our present technology will converge with the mental capacity of human beings within 30 years. I'm a bit of a skeptic about those claims on a number of grounds. I'm not sure that we really have all the intellectual pieces in place, but like many of the other skeptics and even critics of artificial intelligence, I'm particularly thinking of people like John Searles and Roger Penrose, I'm open enough to believe that that possibility is there, though I suspect the complexities of getting to human-level intelligence or anything even comparable to human-level intelligence may be much further out than those scientific speculations. I would not want to even guess how far out I think those are. But in the meantime, I think we have a somewhat different issue, which is robotics research is moving ahead, and artificial intelligence research is moving ahead. And artificial intelligence research is largely an extension of what is already going on with software agents, really simple software programs that do anything from help you search and replace in your word processing document to helping you navigate in your car or do a search over the web. These are all different tools of artificial intelligence, and each of these tools in their own way is granting a bit of autonomy to software. These programs are software agents. We set them in motion, and in the act of setting them in motion, they go and they carry out a task, and that task may be something benign or it may be destructive, like a computer virus. But what is going on in artificial intelligence research is experiments with increasing levels of autonomy for both software and for machine-based software, for robots. So Sony, for example, has just introduced the second generation of their popular robot dog. Their first generation was known as iBo. Their second one, they call the ERS-210. And the ERS-210 is already a robot pet that they're integrating a tremendous amount of functionality, is really as much as the engineers believe they can introduce into the machine. And you can be sure that those engineers are giving attention to, or if they aren't, the company's liability lawyers are asking them to give attention to the fact that they want to be sure that these robo-pets don't unintentionally harm their owners. So I think we're already at the timeline where we're having to deal with issues about how much autonomy will we grant to machines, how can we ensure that they at least behave well, let alone don't unintentionally, if not potentially intentionally, harm.
Well, that's very interesting because I think in most people's minds, there's two entirely different kinds of questions raised. One would be if you had an animal or a human being or a machine that wanted to persist, that had its own intents and purposes over time, that wanted to have a career, wanted to mate, wanted to accumulate resources, but it drew the line at harming other beings, harming human beings in particular, said, I want to accomplish these things, but at this point I will not go past that boundary. And another thing entirely to say that inside your car there might be an algorithm that would say blow up the airbag and thereby protect human beings inside the car, but there's no self-consciousness and there's no self-will to that. Aren't those two entirely different things, and don't they hinge on will and self-consciousness?
Right. Well, there's a question with robots about whether, in what sense will they ever have self-will, or do they already have self-will if you've, in effect, got a robo-pet who has instincts and is trying to search out whatever greater energy supplies or something that represents food sources for itself. That's mechanical. There's no real intentionality in it. There's no thought behind it. But in actual fact, it is engaging in autonomous actions, and those autonomous actions in the wrong place at the wrong time may contribute to some harm being done. And the real question then becomes, well, where does the responsibility lie?
I'm sure that what comes to most people's minds when they hear this topic is the three laws of robotics of Isaac Asimov, which he had in the novel I, Robot. And I just want to read those here as a part of the discussion. The first law is, a robot may not injure a human being or through inaction allow a human being to come to harm. The second law is, a robot must obey the orders given it by human beings, except where such orders would conflict with the first law, that is, they must not harm human beings. And the third law is, a robot must protect its own existence as long as such protection does not conflict with the second or first laws. So it makes robots clearly subordinate to human beings in terms of the value of life. Their life is secondary to human life, and secondary even to obeying human commands, so they should be able to kill one another at human command. Now, are these the kinds of artificial superegos, the kinds of artificial rule-based moral systems that you imagine us having to put into robots as a part of the ethification of robots?
Well, I think that's really what the question is. You know, the question is, if morality, whether that's a mindful morality, meaning it's something that has real intent on the machine's part, or whether it's a mechanical morality, meaning a mindless morality, what is the morality that you would integrate into the machines? That's, you know, the number one question. And the number two question is, can you implement it within a robotic system? On the first question, Asimov's three laws are sort of the first group of laws that anyone ever points to whenever they engage into this discussion. And Asimov, in the book I, Robot, he tells a lot of short stories, and the short stories sort of function as a philosophical commentary on the laws, because he sees that there are certain contradictions within those laws. And that has been an ongoing concern of everybody who has evaluated those laws since. For example, humans do harm to each other. Are we going to, which is the first law, that the robot should not do harm to a human being? Are we going to demand that our robots have a higher standard of morality than we demand of each other? Probably we will want some kind of much higher standard, but what is that standard? One of the latest, Deep Blue 2 beat Garry Kasparov at chess, the next robot challenge that's been focused on is RoboCup, really robots playing soccer. And the projection is that within 50 years, by 2050, they are good enough to beat a world-class soccer team. Well, soccer players certainly hurt each other in the act of playing the game of soccer. Are we expecting that we're going to have robotic systems that are going to be that much more agile than soccer players and in no way hurt any human that they play against? So there are those kinds of contradictions that exist within a rule-based morality, such as Asimov's Law. Another problem that comes up is if a robot sees a surgeon about to cut open a human being for surgery, will the robot stop the surgeon from acting? So the robot's going to need a lot more information than just simple rules like this in order to be able to make what we would consider reasonable moral decisions.
You're listening to Change Surfer Radio. I'm Dr. J, and today I'm speaking with Wendell Wallach. Wendell is a former political activist and human potential instructor. He founded several computer consulting firms and now is working on the field of robot ethics. He's editing a volume on robot ethics and writing other works related to this topic. Wendell, in this field, there's two basic camps of thought about ethics. There's the group of folks who think that ethics can be derived from very general principles, and that it can be amenable to reason, that there's moral reasoning involved. And there's a school of thought that thinks that ethics comes from a more empathic, intuitive, gut-level set of processes. And that's sometimes associated with the feminist movement. And sometimes this argument is that men have a tendency towards more rule-based reasoning, and women have a tendency towards more intuitive reasoning. Applying that to the field of robot ethics, there seem to be two basic questions. One is, we could have a system of rules that we would be able to code a computer into. That would seem to be the less complicated part. The Asimov's laws, other kinds of rule-based systems, which we'd be able to code into a computer. But we would need to also think about whether to be an ethical being, you need to care about those. You need to have the empathy for other beings so that motivates ethical decision-making through those set of laws and principles. And then the flip side is whether we would be able to have empathy for machines, whether beings who are so different, such as machines and human beings, would be able to have empathy for one another.
Well, I think that's a really profound problem, and it goes way beyond that, even when you think about us as human beings and how we function. It's not only empathy, but it may be the whole realm of feelings do we really make our decisions totally rationally, totally through rules and mores that we have learned, or are there a host of affective concerns that come into play? And the most important person on this subject for humans has been the neuroscientist Antonio Damasio, who's pointed out with a host of examples of neurologically damaged human beings that if they don't have a whole affective system, if they don't have their feeling structure in place, they often can't make the most simple of decisions. So that is a major question, and that's not only affected what we understand about humans, but it and whether we can get morality into, let's say, systems such as robots, but it's actually restructured the whole way in which robotics thinks about itself. The earlier founders of artificial intelligence all thought about artificial intelligence in terms of what we'd consider largely logical problem solving, chess playing, natural language intelligence. The present generation of robotic engineers focus much more on trying to create systems that are embodied in the world, that interact with the world. Because they recognize that so much of what we learn about is in interaction, and that particularly in being moral, it's going to depend very highly on the interaction between humans and the robotic systems. So sociability becomes a very important part. This kind of research is particularly focused at the MIT these days, where they're creating robots like Kismet and Cog, robotic experiments that are largely focused on sociability, which is Kismet, which is kind of a socially interactive robot that keeps eye-to-eye contact, takes turns, engages in a kind of verbal interaction, and Cog, which is more a learning robot. But other things going on at MIT are affective computing, which a center under the direction of Rosalind Picard, who's written a book, by the way, of that name. And she is particularly concerned with how these machines can at least deduce what the feelings of human beings are and respond accordingly. A second question is whether the machines need to have feelings themselves. Most of us learn morality through rewards and punishment from our parents. And when Lawrence Kohlberg, who does have a kind of rational theory of morality, talks about the stages of development that we go through as we learn those rational theories, he nevertheless focuses on the fact that the reasons youngsters give for why things are good or right are nearly all reward and punishment based. Would a robot even have such experience?
So there are two things. One is that computers need to be able to recognize that they've caused pleasure or pain in another sentient being and be able to perhaps model and predict whether their actions are going to cause pleasure or pain in other sentient beings, have some set of rules in their head about whether pleasure or pain is something that's going to be created or not. And the other part is that they need to be able to care about whether they cause pleasure or pain in the world. And it's that once you begin to lose indifference about the affairs of the world, once you begin to at least care about your own existence and then further care about the pleasures and pains of others, that's precisely the beginning of emotion, that loss of indifference.
Well, once we start to say that they need to care, and this becomes a problem in all this discussion in artificial intelligence research, what do we really mean? You know, all the prognostications about robots having human-level intelligence in 30 or 40 years means that we could backwards engineer them, and they truly would have things like understanding, care. But in fact, what are we dealing with today? We aren't really dealing with systems that know anything. They're juggling bits of information according to theories that programmers or processes that programmers have set up for them. So what would it even mean to say that a robot had care other than that the robot deduced something about information about the emotional state of that human being. It then had some routines that it processed based on what it interpreted those emotional states to be and made a response. At this stage, that's really all we're talking about. Whether a robot is truly a mind in a sense that it can, that it has or can or will have something, you know, equivalent to what we would consider human care or empathy, that's a very difficult question. It's a question about what degree of sophistication of mind do we require before we would say that even an animal had care or empathy for a human being, let alone a machine-based mind.
You're listening to Change Surfer Radio, and I'm Dr. J. We're talking today with Wendell Wallach. Wendell Wallach founded several computer consulting firms and now is working on an edited volume on robot ethics. Wendell, in the transhumanist milieu, which we recently met through, there are a number of singularity hypotheses or scenarios, ways in which humanity will evolve into post-humanity, that suggest that before we get to artificial intelligence or before we get to independently evolved machine minds, that we may, in fact, translate human beings into machine forms or human minds into machine forms, that we may connect human brains to machines in ways that allow a sharing of consciousness between machines and human beings. In other words, that rather than having to face the problem of robot ethics from an independently evolved and quite alien machine intelligence, we may in fact have the problem and the advantage that the machine minds that we first encounter will in fact be human minds grounded in human ethics and human experience.
Well, I think that probably isn't machine intelligence per se. That's human intelligence really functioning as the guidance system. And that raises just more the question about how closely interconnected the human system is with the machine system, so that the machine systems, in effect, carry out the intention of the human, who is also the clearly the responsible agent in that situation. So we may not need to have a great deal of intelligence built into the machines, which are the appendages of we may not need a great deal of ethics built into the machines per se, which are the appendages to the human being. I think the ethical questions there focus more on humans themselves in terms of whether this extension of our capabilities is really an integrating, healthy, moral extension, and what would be the criteria for determining that it was, as opposed to, let's say, an extension which totally imbalanced us. You know, it's kind of like the root of all evil. If it's truly money, then too much money may be an imbalancing factor. There's no doubt that any enhancing of human capability, if it does not integrate with the basic moral decision-making capabilities of the human being, could be quite destructive or quite damaging. So, I mean, I have some reservations about which of those technologies will be acceptable.
I think there are two scenarios in which those become very pertinent concerns. One is that it may be that as we have increasing cybernetic or neurochemical control over our own brains, that we find that we're both more successful in the world and perhaps even happier if we eliminate all concern about other beings, other people, and just maintain those concerns about our own well-being, our own selfish interests. And therefore, the people who would be most successful in the world would be those who would be most rapaciously self-interested. The other scenario is that as human beings, some human beings begin to cybernetically enhance themselves or interface with machines in various ways, that they would lose the ability to empathize or to feel solidarity with unenhanced human beings or with human beings of a different sort, and vice versa, that we might not feel that biological human beings might not feel solidarity with the enhanced or the cybernetically based human being. What do you think about those two concerns?
Right, that's a real question, and it may provide a significant advantage of those who elect to purchase the option, but will it make them feel like they have any relationship to human beings anymore? That's hard to know.
Well,
the fact is we humans tend to feel relationships to really a very small group of individuals. Some of the research says we're really only able to maintain about 150 relationships at a time, and therefore it's natural that we focus on immediate family, you know, others that we've connected with through projects or other concerns. And ethically, we tend to not grant the same degree of worth to the rest of the human family beyond that initial group.
It is the rare person who sacrifices themselves for the good of society as a whole, or perhaps more pointedly, who would sacrifice their family members for the good of society as a whole. And perhaps that's where we want to make, we imagine that we would like to make machines more ethical than we ourselves are, in some sense kind of monstrously ethical, ethical in ways that we could never imagine ourselves being.
We may, and I think that's going to be the... That's part of the discussion, is what are the criteria that you know, that we would demand of them. I would suspect we will want more higher ethical behavior than we have, and that's one of the reasons why some people argue for computer ethics or robot ethics. They argue against the they raise questions about how well do humans make ethical decisions. One of the issues about emotions is, throughout history, some philosophers have seen them to be a contribution to ethical decision-making. Others have seen them to be a detriment. Too much emotionality. You're too emotional. That's the way we consider it. So some people see an advantage to artificial intelligence-based systems because they are more likely to be dispassionate. Again, if we say a human being is too calculating, we tend to think they're giving too much emphasis to their own self-interest. But the advantage of a computer-based system is it can actually think through in much greater detail, at least in a rational sequence, a variety of options than a human being would, and therefore might help humans in making a more rational or more moral choice. So There are some areas in which, at the least, these artificial intelligence-based systems may function as real complements to human moral decision-making, let alone the question of whether they actually may be better at making those decisions in some cases.
Well, Wendell, I've really enjoyed making your acquaintance, and we all look forward to Robot Ethics coming out on the bookshelves within, as I understand it, about 2 years from now, as you take another year to finish the putting together the volume and another year to get it out onto the bookshelves. And I've been speaking with Wendell Wallach. He is editing a volume on robot ethics. He's a former human potential instructor, political activist, and computer consultant who's currently devoting himself to the field of ethics for our new cybernetic age. Thanks so much for joining us today, Wendell.
I've enjoyed it.
You've been listening to Change Surfer Radio. Change Surfer Radio is produced at WHUS Stores at the University of Connecticut. If you want to learn more about democratic transhumanism, or you want to share your thoughts about today's show with me, Dr. J, email me at jhughes, that's J-H-U-G-H-E-S, at changesurfer.com. At the Change Surfer website, you can find past and future shows archived in streaming MP3 thanks to the Infos Radio Project. Also, at www.changesurfer.com are instructions on how to order copies of our shows and myriad relevant links. So educate, agitate, and organize. And I hope to meet you in a sexy, high-tech, and yet radically democratic future.